159 Ivy Street, Chapter 12, The Consequential Letter. Brad, I am so sorry about what I said before, but I am here now. I want us. I'm in love with you. The words landed not gently, but precisely, like a blade finding the soft place between ribs. His chest tightened. His throat burned. Josephine, he thought. You have no idea how much I need you right now. He wasn't ready. He knew that. But he also knew this. He had never left her. Not once. She had been with him in every quiet decision, every withheld touch, every moment he pretended restraint was virtue instead of fear. She had lived in his heart long before he dared to say her name out loud. The night stretched endlessly. This was no longer late. It was early without being morning. A time where rules dissolved, where exhaustion became porous and thought slipped sideways. While Braddon sat in a hunched-over posture with his elbows resting on his upper thighs, his cell phone clutched in both hands, he read the entire text message from Josephine while waiting in the post-op room. She is so right. This Big Bang eruptive connection is now a fusion bomb that can't be contained. Yet, neither of us wants to disarm the fallout and completely disregard the casualties along the way. Am I a bad person? Braddon wondered. Or is love simply the most selfish thing we ever agree to feel? Hindsight was a gift for the unblinding, but love trumps all. Love ignored caution entirely, scattering warnings like ash. Braddon was exhausted while his mind wandered away from the text he just read. His body felt hollowed out, as if something essential had been scooped from him and left behind somewhere between the ambulance and this antiseptic purgatory. He reached into the pocket and felt paper, Lisa's envelope. It wasn't sealed. That struck him first. No barrier, no protection, just truth folded once waiting. As he unfolded the page, a faint scent of Lisa's perfume filled the air, familiar, intimate, devastating. He closed his eyes when he saw the first line. My lovely Bradley, his breath caught. He read slowly, carefully. Each sentence landed with unbearable precision. You are the blindest man I know when all eyes are on me amongst other men, not yours. Do you not see me, and through me, that I have loved you for so long? The night we spent together, which seemed like a lifetime ago, is still nested in my heart. I feel branded by your touch and want so much to be part of you every day. I know you felt my glance and smiles when I saw you in the office, yet you always made me feel empty in return. It was not by chance that I worked late that Friday night when I told you I was working on the payroll. That was a lie. Did you even realize that I don't do payroll? LOL. Bradley, you're a deep thinker, a sensitive and brilliant man whom I have never seen another within your shadow. You're unique like no other in my eyes. This is why I have to say goodbye. I am not saying it will be permanent, but I can't make any promises. Perhaps you will realize our spark could light your soul in flames to call me back into your life. For now, this is the end, my lovely Bradley. Loved you blindly, Lisa. Braddon lowered the letter. His hands were shaking harder now. He wanted to disappear. I'm so sorry, Lisa, he whispered to no one. I hid because I was afraid of not measuring up, afraid of being seen next to you, afraid of wanting something I didn't know how to hold. Cowardice was easier to name now. He prayed, not formally, not properly, just a raw plea that she would wake up, that he might still get the chance to say the words aloud instead of rehearsing them in guilt. Am I to blame for having caused so much pain to the two women in my life that I would die for if asked? Lisa, I am so sorry. We are so different, and I could never see myself stacked against your stature, so I remained in the shadows. I could say I wasn't ready, but that would be dishonest and cowardly for not pursuing it. For that, I am forever sorry, and please forgive me. I pray I will have the chance to tell you when you're awake from the surgery. The ceiling lights buzzed faintly, his head tilted back, dizziness washing over him. Braddon let out a deep sigh. Oddly, he remembered his conversation with the old man he met earlier in the hallway, the file folder, the knowing look, the strange calm. It was troubling, layering more burdens on the never-ending night. Somehow, the chapel in the basement seemed like a good idea right now. It felt ridiculous, necessary. Spiritually speaking, it may be the only salvation to settle his nerves, agitation, and uncertainties. Braddon thought about his Josephine and the message she left. He felt the weight on his shoulders, while each step taken towards the elevator felt like dredging through mud, heavy and strenuously painful. He looked back at the waiting area as he waited for the elevator. It was cold and eerily quiet, like a morgue with light green colored couches and walls. Good news or bad, This was not the place for anyone holding their breath while waiting for the proverbial axe to fall. The ding tone, signaling the elevator's arrival, seemed louder than usual. The entire hall was empty this late in the night or this early in the morning. Any sound was echoed and amplified like an echo chamber. Braddon smiled at the thought that even the tiny tapping from a mouse's feet would reverberate an elephant's pounding steps. He entered the elongated elevator with doors at both ends, then pressed the button marked B. Braddon hoped the morgue was not at the basement level, while the elevator slowly descended. You would think there would be a button labeled for the chapel to promote religion when it's most needed. Atheist or not, their last words were to God, asking for forgiveness, just in case there's a place called hell. The same light green-colored walls and endless hallways greeted Braddon once the elevator doors opened. He entered the hallway and then looked both ways for the direction to the chapel. He was a grown man wandering a hospital basement looking for God. It's almost 4 a.m., and I'm looking for the freaking chapel in a hospital. Why am I doing this? Somehow I was drawn to it when the old man mentioned it. I don't know why I'm losing it. Why am I doing this? He muttered. Braddon heard footsteps coming from behind him. As he turned, a figure appeared from the adjacent hallway. Astonishingly, it was the old man with the file folder whom he met upstairs earlier. Alert, energetic, impossibly awake. Again, young man, did you find the waiting room? Why are you in the basement? The old man looked remarkably alert and highly energetic this late at night. Hi, we met earlier. Yes, I found the waiting room, thank you. I was thinking about the chapel and thought it might be a good idea. Braddon said, embarrassed by the honesty. Perhaps for inspiration or sanity. Braddon didn't know what to say. There was no logical reasoning, but who cares? Well then, the man smiled. It's fortunate I have the key. The chapel is this way. Braddon followed the old man down the hallway towards an opening. Fake-looking lit candles were mounted on each side of a double door with a plaque scribed, Chapel on the wall. The old man took out a key from his jacket pocket. It was not a standard-size key like a typical SCHLAG key for a front door. It was more like a lolly beads key with a fancy handle, but it was large and better suited for an enormous entry. The door opened to a small, faintly lit room with only four pews. The front altar was nondescript, without a crucifix or a religious statue. It did have a circular, multicolored stained glass design with a dove in the center holding an olive branch in its beak. Braddon immediately recognized the dove as a religious symbol of peace and the act of baptism by early Christians. He slowly walked to the front of the room. Without looking, Braddon thanked the old man. Thank you, I won't be very long. Bradley, take all the time you need. You are home, the old man responded. The word sent a chill through him. Braddon felt the goosebumps on his arms when he heard the name that only Lisa calls him by, Bradley. Excuse me, what did you call me? He turned. There was no one there but an open door into an empty hallway. Josephine could not sleep. She kept turning in her bed since her last conversation with Brad. Oh God, I hope Lisa is okay. I need her to be okay because she has my Braddon. She thought of calling Brad to check in on him. Her earlier conversation with Natalie brought her comfort, but it was wearing off quickly. Once again, Jose was sitting in the bowels of a pit, all alone and feeling helpless. The hell with it. I need to hear his voice. Josephine dialed his number. There's no tone. No service to this call appeared across the LCD screen. That's strange. How can there be no service? Jose panicked. So many things had gone wrong tonight, and the nightmare continues. She dialed again and got the same message, no service to this call. Josephine hunched into a fetal position. Tears began to form around her eyes. She reached for a pillow to hide her sadness and frustration. The sobbing faintly dispelled into a light sleep, releasing the pain in her heart. Jose's night was finally at rest, while Braddon's was about to face a divine awakening. Braddon's delirium can be described as a waking coma where reality is a prism of multi-lit shadows. How did the old man know me? Why did he call me Bradley? No one calls me that except Lisa. WTF, am I going crazy? Where did he go? Jesus, was he even real? Braddon rested his tired body in the second row pew. His body folded in on itself. The room was an entirely soundless, eerily death-like sensation that all was lost, and oblivion was the surrounding wall. Memories surfaced uninvited, kneeling as a boy, stiff uniform, incense thick in his lungs. Altar bells. Latin words he never understood but trusted anyway. Father's hands guiding his, teaching him how to hold something sacred, the cup of Christ, without dropping it. With his eyes closed, Brad could hear every heartbeat pounding like a drum between his ears. Footsteps. Braddon was woken from slumber by distinguishable footsteps approaching. It must be the old man returning. Braddon turned his head towards the door, only realizing they were now closed. I don't remember the doors being closed when the old man left. I am sure of it, or maybe not. Braddon felt a presence approaching. He quickly turned towards the stained glass behind the altar. A figure was observing him. "I'm Father Raymond," he said gently. Braddon was startled. "Where did you come from? You scared the crap out of me." Braddon almost laughed. "Where did we all come from? A question asked a million times and many millions more, I suppose. I apologize that I startled you. Honestly, you startled me. We don't get many visitors this late at night or this early. It depends on your perspective whether the glass is half empty or half full. I am Father Raymond. I am the custodian of the chapel." "Sorry, Father, I am exhausted. It has been a challenging and confusing day. I think I'm just delusional." "My friend had an accident and was taken to this hospital. My name is Braddon Beckett. Hello, Father Raymond." In a calmer tone, Braddon added, "By the way, an old man led me here earlier, but he took off before I had the chance to thank him." "Ah, you mean my helper, Eddie. He may be old, but he has proven to be consistently helpful." "Eddie appears to be weak. I can tell you for a fact that he's much stronger than what you see. You look troubled, Braddon. Is there anything I can help you with?" "I came to pray for my friend who had a car accident earlier. I'm very worried that... Before Braddon could finish saying, Father Raymond whispered, "That she may die," the priest finished for him. Braddon looked up and felt a connection with Father Raymond. He can't put his finger on it. "It's more of a feeling than a recollection of the past." Braddon stared. "Father, I didn't tell you that my friend was a woman, did I?" Father Raymond smiled. "Well, you must have. How could I have known otherwise?" "Well, I guess." Braddon looked puzzled. The conversation felt layered, like something remembered rather than happening. When the priest stood to leave, he paused. "You have a strong spirit," he said. "All three of them, you always had it in you." Raymond continued, "Be stronger now and all things will be as they should be. It's late and I am an old man like Eddie. I must take leave and let you be. We are here for you, Bradley." "Excuse me, what did you call me?" Braddon looked up in the direction of the altar where Father Raymond stood. There was no one in the chapel other than Braddon, not again. "This disappearing act is freaking me out." Brad, shaken, he stood up slowly, heart racing, while debating if he had lost his delirious mind. He saw the chapel doors. They were open, just as they were before. "I swear that the doors were closed just before Father Raymond appeared." Braddon left the chapel feeling surreal in a different dimension of space and time. He took the same elevator back to the visiting room. While waiting inside the elevator for the doors to open, Braddon had an epiphany of the magnitude of what he just experienced. The names of Braddon's deceased brothers were Raymond and Eddie. Oh my God, the world tilted. His chest seized. Braddon practically fell out of the elevator. The dizziness and the feeling of an oncoming heart attack overwhelmed him from the sudden realization. Perhaps it was just a coincidence, but this was a whole new level of divine intervention. "I can't breathe. I am in the perfect place to get medical help or to die. I must be dying. People say that just before you die, family comes to greet you. Was that it? Is it my time?" Braddon's cell phone rang, and the sound echoed through the walls in surround sound effect. It jolted him back into focus, the green walls, cold leather seats, and his cell phone buzzing. The LCD screen showed unknown caller. Braddon checked his watch for the time, 4:50 a.m. "Damn, how long have I been here? I lost track of time, I lost track of reality." The cell kept buzzing. He looked at the caller ID once more. It was not Emily. "Hello, who is this?" "Hi, is this Braddon Beckett?" "I am looking for my sister, Lisa. My name is Michelle." The universe, it seemed, was not done with him yet. Braddon was still thinking about the chapel. "Did I just meet my deceased brothers, whom I have never met officially or spoken to? Then I spoke with them like total strangers and yet felt strangely connected." "Hello, are you there, Braddon?" "Oh God, I am so sorry. You're Michelle, Lisa's sister from California. Hi, how did you get my number?" "Lisa gave it to me a few years ago as an emergency contact. Is it okay that I called you? Do you know what has happened to my sister? She was supposed to tell me her flight schedule tonight. She went out for dinner, which was the last thing I knew." "Believe me when I tell you that the dinner was the last thing I heard, too. Michelle, you'd better sit down and strap on tight. Lisa is in the hospital and having surgery as we speak. I am so sorry." A long moment passed before either spoke. If Braden had his way, he would end the conversation now. Braden, I know my sister trusted you. Actually, she loves you, but I don't think you even knew that. At least, that's what my sister said to me before she decided to come to California. Because of you. Braden, do you have anything to do with my sister ending up in the hospital? The silence on the line stretched long enough for Braden to hear his own breathing again, ragged, uneven, too loud in his ears. The hospital around him had resumed its low hum, machines whispering life into other rooms, other nights, but the moment between him and Michelle felt sealed off, suspended. Braden, Michelle said at last, her voice was steady, which somehow made it worse. I asked you a question. I know, he replied, he swallowed, and I'm not going to lie to you. He sat down slowly, the green leather chair cold against the backs of his legs. He leaned forward, elbows on knees, confession posture. He'd learned it young. I didn't push her, he said carefully. I didn't argue with her. I didn't chase her into the street. But if you're asking whether my presence in her life mattered, whether I complicated things, then yes, I did. Didn't interrupt. Lisa loved me, he continued. Saying it out loud felt like stepping onto broken glass barefoot. She loved me in a way I didn't know how to meet. I didn't reject her outright. I didn't embrace her either. I lived in the middle, and I let her stay there with me. A long exhale came through the phone. She told me, Michelle said quietly, about you for years. Braden closed his eyes. She saw something in me, he said. Something I was afraid to look at directly. I admired her, her confidence, her warmth. But every time she stepped closer, I stepped sideways, not because she wasn't enough. Because I didn't trust myself to be. Then why keep her close? Michelle asked, not accusing, honest, because losing her felt worse than disappointing her, Braden said. And that's not love, that's fear wearing a mask. The words landed heavy, irrevocable. I should have been braver, he went on. I should have named the truth earlier. I should have told her I couldn't give her what she wanted instead of letting her hope I eventually would. Was quiet again. When she spoke, her voice trembled just slightly. She is returning to California because of you, she said. Not only you, but you were the catalyst. She said she needed distance to survive loving you. Braden pressed his knuckles into his mouth, stifling the sound that wanted to escape. She left me a letter, he said hoarsely. I read it tonight. She saw everything I pretended not to notice, and she still loved me anyway. That's my sister, Michelle said, pride and grief braided together. I don't deserve her forgiveness, Braden said, but if she wakes up, I will ask for it, not to keep her, just to tell her the truth. What is the truth? Michelle asked. That I loved her, he said, but not in the way she needed, and that loving someone doesn't permit you to keep them half alive in your life. Let out a sharp breath, half laugh, half sob. You sound like someone who's finally done running, she said. I don't think I have the energy left to run, Braden replied. Or the right. Was movement on Michelle's end, fabric shifting, maybe her sitting down too, two strangers anchored by the same woman, the same fear. There's something else, she said. Lisa told me you're not alone in your heart. Braden didn't respond immediately. Yes, he said finally. There's someone else. Do you love her? The question was clean, surgical. Yes, he said, no hesitation. I do. Does she know about my sister? Yes. Lisa knew about her. Braden nodded, even though she couldn't see it. Not everything, but enough. Was quiet for a long time. You've made a mess, she said eventually. Braden agreed. I have. But you're not a villain, she added. Just a man who waited too long to speak. The grace in that statement undid him more than accusation ever could. I will sit with her, Michelle said. When I arrive, I don't care what history you share. I care that my sister will not be alone. She won't be, Braden said. Not if I can help it. Soften then. She trusted you, Braden. That counts for something. Don't waste it if she gives you another moment. I won't, he said. I swear. The call ended gently. No dramatic goodbye, just a click. Braden stayed seated long after the screen went dark. Confession didn't lighten him the way he'd expected. It clarified him instead, stripped him down to what remained once excuses were gone. The stars have collided in a cold fusion reaction, producing ice particles with sharp edges, death by a million cuts. Braden's night was a living horror, acting as the conductor of a train without brakes that's about to jump off a cliff. A moment of reflection that perhaps such an ending would be a blessing. However, unable to say goodbye to Josephine would be the ultimate torture he would relive in hell for eternity. How could such an innocent and beautiful love, a blossomed flower, become such a thorn to anyone who had experienced love in a lifetime? He thought of Josephine sleeping somewhere far away, of Lisa suspended between worlds, of himself finally standing still, Love had not saved him, but truth, finally spoken, just might have for the time being.